The Cowboys come back from the brink and the NFC East is wide open. Plus, how the Bears are trending up as they head into the stretch run. The Chargers are for real, a devastating loss for the Rams offense, and what might have been the last straw for a couple of coaches on the hot seat. We've got all of that and much more from Week 10 on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. This was Week 10 Sunday. We had a lot of upsets today. We had some games that weren't particularly close, but we had a lot of underdogs pull out victories, including this Sunday night game, Andy.
Which is why this whole strength of schedule thing that we talk about so much this time of year doesn't really mean a whole lot, and why I'm always so dismissive of it, because these are NFL teams playing against other NFL teams.
We'll see. Well, I will bring that up later in the show, and we'll get to debate this whole thing again. Fascinating.
Waste debate. 5 minutes.
Never-ending debate. But we're starting with the Sunday night game. And that was the Cowboys who were on the brink, and everyone was ready to write them off, and Jason Garrett was going to lose his job after that Monday night performance. The Cowboys bounce back and get a victory in this one, 27-20. I guess let's start with what the Cowboys were able to do defensively in this game. Things opened up a little bit in the second half of this one, but they were very good up front, and obviously those linebackers are fine with even without Sean Lee, which has not been the case in past years.
Well, they have a different guy replacing Sean Lee. Now, Leighton Vander Esch has stood out on film every single week that he's been in the NFL, and he's played a little bit more every week, and he was already starting to take some snaps from Sean Lee. So it's been a changing of the guard. And after the game, Vander Esch made comment about how Sean Lee's really gotten him ready. So it's a group effort, and I completely believe that. But I would be surprised. Vander Esch is not coming off the field again. So whenever Lee gets back, we'll see what role it's in. And right now, I'm sure it's not even near the back of Dallas's mind. Jalen Smith, who you wrote off, Gary, and Leighton Vander Esch are their linebackers. And right now, they're as good of a 1-2 punch, at least young linebackers, as anyone in football.
The Cowboys lost and by the way, I did not write off Jalen Smith. I thought he was a relative disappointment for the first portion of his career, and I stand by that because he was a relative disappointment for the first portion of his career. He's been very good this year. They lost a $45 million man, Andy, in that linebacking core. That's who used to replace Sean Lee, and now they got Leighton Vander Esch in there instead of
Are you talking about Anthony Hitchens?
Yeah.
You know how many times, Anthony, I used to think about this the other day watching Chiefs film, because I feel like I'm always typing Reggie Ragland notes to myself because the things he's good at, he's very good at, and the things he's bad at, he's very bad at. And that's the kind of stuff that shows up on film notes. That's what other teams are noticing, too. I realized as I was doing that, I don't think I've typed Anthony Hitchens' name more than 4 or 5 times all season long. Anthony Hitchens is just a guy. That's why they let him walk and someone else overpay him, and then they drafted a first-round guy in his spot. You were being facetious.
I'm not saying Anthony Hitchens is better than Leighton Vander Esch. That's crazy.
Well, you were saying Jalen Smith was no good, so I thought maybe your whole view of the Dallas linebacking core is just slanted and wrong.
No, they are very good. I already said my apologies to Jalen Smith earlier this season when he was playing really well, and I'm not going to do it again. We're going to forget I said any of that stuff in past years. And we're going to focus on the present now, Andy. Though I do want to make one more point about Anthony Hitchens. I always get him and Reggie Ragland confused during Chiefs games because Hitchens used to wear 59 the Cowboys, and now Ragland wears 59 for the Chiefs. I can never remember which of them wears 59 and which wears 53 in Chiefs games.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hate that kind of drives me nuts on film, and that's what September is always like for me. Is guys with I complained about that back in September, so I hear you. I feel you on that one. You know what was interesting in this game, Gary, is that Dallas early on played some man coverage on first down, and Vander Esch was a big part of that. In fact, the two plays that really stood out to me, there were times in this game that he matched up to Ertz, and Ertz, I don't think, got him very much. I don't think Ertz had a great night, as he's had a great season. I don't think he punished Van Der Esch for that, but Van Der Esch has been an up-and-down man-to-man defender so far, and I think it's because he's just adjusting to the nuance of the NFL game. But his interception came on first down, and it was man coverage, which you don't see very often, which is why I believe Wentz did not account for him. Wentz was looking the other way and just assumed no one would be there, because Van Der Esch dropped to a different position than you would in cover three. So Cowboys stuck with that man coverage, and Josh Adams for the Eagles had a nice 29-yard run shortly after that, and all they did was Adams ran outside to the right, and Zach Ertz blocked down to the left, and Ertz was guarded by Van Der Esch man-to-man, so Van Der Esch, who would have been the primary run defender, was running away from the point of attack. It's called an easy release. Instead of blocking the guy, you just run the opposite direction of the ball, and the man defender follows him, and now he's not tackling the running back. So it was interesting that Dallas did that, and then they also blitzed early in the first, a lot in the first half. Jalen Smith, your guy, he was a big blitzer for them. So a little bit of a departure for the Cowboys. This is stuff they do normally, but they did it on different downs than usual. They did some of this on first down. It wasn't all third down, and I think it kept the Eagles a little bit off balance. Now, as the game progressed, though, Dallas settled into more of their normal stuff, their cover three stuff, and they did pretty well with it, but you did see Philadelphia got a feel for them later in the game. So I wish this one would have gone five quarters, because both offenses figured out the other defense in the second half.
They really did, which is weird, because, I mean, you know, we were midway through the second quarter, and this one felt like it was going to be a 13-12 type of final. Cowboys offense, I mean, look, they lost Zach Martin, which would have been devastating. Then Martin came back on. It looked like a serious injury. Apparently, it was not terribly serious, even if he was not playing at 100%. He was back on the field. But they got it going pretty well. And obviously with the Eagles so banged up in the secondary, there was something of a, you know, an unusual situation for the Cowboys where they actually had an edge with their weapons against the cover guys for the other team. But I thought the Cowboys found a pretty good rhythm in this one.
Oh, absolutely. We talked on Thursday about what will Dallas do with Philadelphia is weak in the secondary, but Dallas does not have the greatest receiving core. This was their best night they've had all season, I think. Their wide receivers looked better than in any other game. But we thought Dallas would run the ball, even though teams don't run the ball very much against Philadelphia. Philly came in ranked number two in run defense, but it's strength on strength, and Dallas, that's your strength. You're a running team, so you don't get away from your strength. And they absolutely ran the ball. Elliott ran it very well, and their offensive line moved the line of scrimmage more and more as the game progressed. You know, it's always interesting, too, Gary, have you noticed this with Elliott? I think he's the best runner in football. I don't think it's Todd Gurley or I don't know who else is getting credit as the best runner. Most everybody says Gurley now. I don't know who else is getting nodded on that. I think it's Elliott, though. He always seems to run with the exact tempo that the play demands. He can go fast. He can go slow. He can go fast and then slow, or slow and then fast. His running tempo, I think, is the best in the NFL.
That's a good point. No, I'll agree with you on that. They're both really good. There's a Melvin Gordon bandwagon now too. I think he's a step behind those two guys, but
that's great you brought that up. I think Gordon's a very good man-to-man blocker runner, which is a different type of runner. I think Gurley's a great zone runner, and I think Elliott, because of that stop-start ability, can do all of the above, and that's why I'd put him ahead of those two guys.
All right. Well, the NFC East, just more and more interesting. We're going to talk about Washington later in the show. Obviously, they had another truly bizarre victories, but they're sitting there two games up on both of these teams, the Cowboys and the Eagles, and we're just kind of waiting for the Eagles to kick it in and take this division. But seven games to go. they got to start getting some wins.
They don't look like the same team as last year. And it's weird because Carson Wentz is playing just as well as he did a year ago. Their O-line's not quite the same as it was a year. It's weird. Everything's about 5% different for Philadelphia. Take a little bit here, take a little bit there. And when you add it all up, you've got a much different team, even with the quarterback playing so well.
No, I mean, like we say all the time, that there's not that much difference between 11-5 and 5-11 in this league. And,
nope.
The Eagles just they're not quite clicking at this point. This, you know, problems on the back end, downgrades kind of everywhere else, and that's what you get. But let's go out to let's do this NFC North battle here. The Bears collecting another win here, beating the Lions at home. I thought this was Mitchell Trubisky's best game of the season by a fairly wide margin.
I did too. I wrote about Trubisky for the extra point. I know you know that because I've seen the edits, or at least I've seen the headline you're proposing that we do for that article. I'm encouraged by Trubisky because I don't think they need him to light the world on fire. I don't think they need him to become a whole lot more than what he is. That is such a complete team around him. They're good in the backfield. I think their receivers are getting better. They're figuring out how they want to use Trey Burton and what that means when they use the tight end the way they're using him. And then defensively, with Khalil Mack back, that's probably, is that the best defense in the NFC? Gary, will we find out next Sunday when they play Minnesota? Who Carolina, I guess, although they had a horrible game on Thursday. Chicago might have the best defense in the NFC.
You're not going to like my answer, Andy. They haven't played anyone.
No.
We're
going to
find
like
out.
That.
We're going to find
I
out.
Don't
over
like
the
that
last
answer.
We're going to find out over the last 2 months of the season how good they really are. I think their schedule has been – I'm not drawing the line. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, you know, they beat this 4-5 team, but they didn't beat this 6-3 team and stuff like that. I think they played an exceptionally easy schedule to this point, and we're going to find out what happens.
I don't like that. You're right. I think that's sloppy and lazy. That's college football type analysis. We're doing an NFL show here.
Oh, yeah, I look, yeah, they're potentially really good. The one thing that sort of, I don't want to say, this is going to sound silly, I'm going to say it worries me because I don't know if it's sustainable. They are getting a ton of interceptions this year, and when they have struggled in the past, and we've kind of said, wow, they're just not getting the turnovers that they usually get. This year, they're just coming in bunches. They have, let me bring up the actual number here so I don't sound like I'm talking complete nonsense, but they're at 16 now. They have 16 interceptions through 9 games. I don't think that's sustainable. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll keep piling up, but and I think that is a result of good teams tend to have good quarterbacks, and good quarterbacks tend to not throw a lot of interceptions. You know who throws a lot of interceptions? Sam Bradford and the Fitzpatrick Winston
Sam Darnold, a young guy learning.
And Brock Osweiler and Nathan Peterman, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I do get what you're saying, but we've wondered before. I've always wondered why the Bears don't have more interceptions over the years because they play too deep zone coverage a lot. So that's a lot of eyes on the quarterback. That's a lot of eyes on the routes. The reason you would play that, one of the reasons, is to create turnovers. That's why that's the main objective of playing zone coverage instead of man-to-man. Man-to-man, you play that to create stops. Zone coverage, you play it to create turnovers at the highest 30,000-foot view of these things. And the Bears never did that, and we always said, well, if they're a pass rusher away, if they can find the pass rush, they'll start making more turnovers. And I think it's gone that way. I think that secondary is incredibly well coached. I think Bryce Callahan is maybe the best slot corner in the NFL. Mm-hmm. The safeties know what they're doing. Amu Kamara and Kyle Fuller outside, they don't get enough credit. That is a really fine-tuned secondary that they have. And then the other thing is their linebackers, mainly Roquan Smith, they're starting to play faster.
And by the way, I want to tell you about this because of the beautiful symmetry of the whole thing. They have 16 interceptions from 9 games this year. Each of the last 3 seasons, they had 8 interceptions. So they've already doubled their total in 17 or 16 or 15. I will say, because I want to say nice things about the Bears, I mean, look, you wrote about it a little bit in your Friday preview column. Roquan Smith is getting better. That was something that was going to happen. He got in there late, obviously, and you kind of said, okay, if this defense is going to have issues, it might be early on, but you figure they'll get better with Smith adjusting to the NFL after a late start. And obviously, Khalil Mack got there right before the season started. And you know, this is it feels like, and when you look on the offensive side of the ball, you have the new system. it looked like a team that would be better in the second half of the season than the first half. And you know, look at this, they're 6-3 right now. So they collected wins. I mean, that's part of the battle here.
I'm going to be excited. This will be a fun team to watch down the stretch. Certain teams, football is just more fun when they're good. And to me, the Bears and those Bear fans and that market in Chicago, that's one of those situations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And look, they have the Vikings twice. That starts next week with the Sunday Nighter. They will host the Vikings. They still have the Rams. They host the Packers. So, yeah, they have some games coming up here. And
they get these Lions again on Thursday. They're going to play the Lions two times in, 11 days from November 11th to November 22nd.
That's the Thanksgiving game.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one.
I just want to make one point on the Lions. I'm so disappointed in the Lions this year. I will never be able to wrap my head around that Golden Tate trade. I know they weren't going to come to a contract agreement with him. I feel like they punted the season when there was absolutely no reason to punt the season. And I don't know what's going on with that defense right now.
Well, and all on the note of the Golden Tate trade, and then we'll move on to a new game here, because we talked about who replaces Golden Tate. And I speculated it would be TJ Jones or Theo Riddick, and we heard there was a report that maybe it's Brandon Powell, this undrafted rookie guy. Powell, I don't know if he's even played a single snap yet. When the in-house replacement is theoretically an undrafted rookie who has not been on the field, it means you don't have an in-house replacement, because you would never trade a quality starter away for an undrafted rookie who you haven't seen in live action yet. No matter how much you love him in camp, how good he's looking, you know, the beat writers are there all the time. Eventually someone's going to tell them that hey, this guy that you haven't written about because you've been here 49 days in a row, day 50, let's write about this undrafted rookie who's very good. Just tread lightly on that stuff. It doesn't work that way. Very rarely does a guy just step up and get promoted from within in the NFL like that. And it has been Theo Riddick in the slot. And he's been okay. He's been okay. He's not Golden Tate.
Oh, that trade. That trade's going to bother me. Before we move on, Andy, you know, as we covered a little while ago here, you know, giving up in your season because you have a chance to grab a third-round pick, not very smart. Just like those job sites that send you tons of the wrong resumes to sort through, that is not smart. But you know what is smart? Going to ZipRecruiter.com/things to hire the right person. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and expertise for your job, and actively invites them to apply so you get qualified candidates fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S. This rating comes from hiring sites on Trustpilot with over 1,000 reviews. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/things. That's ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. ZipRecruiter.com/things. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Chargers, Andy. So many wins now. I think they have enough wins that I feel confident in saying that they're going to play January football.
I'll
jinx them
with
that.
Yep.
Is there anything they still have Joey Bosa coming back. I mean, granted, it was the Raiders today, and they're supposed to beat up on the Raiders, and they did. This is a complete team, though. I mean, we kind of said on paper before the season it was a complete team. But, you know, 6 wins in a row now after the 1-2 start. The remaining Chargers fans must be feeling pretty good about this.
You know, one thing they've done this season, I think they're at the point we can start talking details with this team. I don't think our listeners need to hear us say it again that they have big receivers and Phillip Rivers can do everything. And we already talked about Melvin Gordon. And their defense, we've talked about Derwin James a lot, who again flashed today as a blitzer, but that was not a huge part of what they did. The other guy that plays down there next to James that I think is worth examining is Adrian Phillips, their third safety, who has been in on about 60% of the snaps this year. They're a dime defense. They're not a nickel defense. And with James and Phillips, two big safeties that can play down the box, they have a tremendous amount of versatility. They can play coverage and they can play the run with those two guys. That's a big deal. And I think if they're going to go deep into January, like you've suggested, Phillips and James will be a big part of that. They're going to have to stay on the field. They're both having tremendous seasons.
They are. No, it's a really good defense. And yeah, James was a guy in Florida State last year as he kind of worked his way back from some of the knee problems. There are some people wondering, you know, do you Shaq Thompson him? Do you make him a linebacker at the next level? He does his best work around the line of scrimmage. Really, he's done his best work all over the field as a rookie here. This Raiders team, look, everyone was kind of wondering after they got carved up by Nick Mullins and got embarrassed on Thursday night, are they completely mailing it in? I don't want to sound like some like rah-rah, you know, like my sport type of guy, but Raiders played hard in this game. They're undermanned. Raiders went hard.
Yeah, I have not had an issue with their effort on film at any point this season. I don't think they've looked very good on their O-line, which has led to inconsistent offense overall. Carr's been a little bit up and down, although he had some nice moments in this game, some gutsy moments. They just don't have a defense. They don't have the personnel, which means they don't quite know what they're doing with their – I mean, they know what they're doing with their scheme, but not really, because you don't have the guys in there to run it consistently. So it's same story with the Raiders. In fact, I would say from now on, Gary, Raider games on these Sunday night / Monday morning podcasts, we can just say – see previous show, and it's going to be the same thing every single week, and we can spend the time talking about whoever beat the Raiders that day, because not a lot's changing here. There's not a lot on the horizon. They're probably going to have 7 or 8 new starters on defense at this time next year.
Yeah, that is true. All right, well, let's go on to the Seahawks and the Rams. This was their second meeting of the year here, and the Rams once again survived this one a little bit. I guess the, you know, if you're a Rams fan, you're still a little bit worried about this defense. You're encouraged by the fact that they won another close game. They're 5-0 one possession games now. What I thought was most encouraging was Dante Fowler. After picking up an incredibly boneheaded penalty to basically push the Seahawks punt team off the field and bring the offense back, and the Seahawks got a touchdown in the second half there. He made a huge play late, strip-sacking Russell Wilson, led directly to a touchdown. I mean, he is flashing as the kind of edge presence that they really need with this defense.
Absolutely, and I was wrong. I didn't think they would play him in their base 3-4/5-2 package, and he has played in that. So he's not an every down player for him, but he's been an almost an every package player, and he'll help. If he continues doing what he's doing, they get an edge rushing presence. They'll have Ndamukong Suh on the other side. And then Donald and Brockers inside. That's what they need. That'll help. I think the big story in this game, though, Gary, is the other side of the ball, and Cooper Kupp going down with what sounds like an ACL injury. That's going to have major repercussions on that Rams offense. Major repercussions.
Yeah, all we know at the moment is a non-contact knee injury for Kupp, and obviously he didn't return in this one. What do they do to replace him? I mean, you have Robert Woods, who's another kind of slot possession type guy. You know, Gerald Everett, my real guy, Jalen Smith is not my guy. Gerald Everett is my guy and forever my guy. He's made a couple of plays, a couple of touchdowns the last couple of weeks. Maybe he gets a bigger role. I mean, yeah, what do they do to replace Kupp at this point?
I don't know if he's not irreplaceable, but there are things he does that are irreplaceable. The guy's going to be Josh Reynolds that does it. Kupp was out a few weeks ago, and Reynolds filled in, and Reynolds made some plays here and there, but he's not as good on the deep crossers as Kupp is. And then the really big deal that will never get noticed, that the Rams within the organization, they talk about this a lot, is, and Robert Woods is the other guy who does this, Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods are so good at disguising their routes off the snap and making it look like they might be run blocking or running a route. So when everybody talks about the Rams, you don't know if it's going to be a run play or a pass play. All the plays start out looking the same. That's not just a fake handoff action with Goff and Gurley, and it's not just the offensive line. It's also the way those wide receivers are taught, and the way Kupp presents himself as a route runner does wonders for that offensive line. They rave about it there. And to lose that, you lose some subtle help for those offensive linemen. And I think it's going to have consequences. They're not going to be as good there. So the line now has to play better in the running game. You'd never think about a number two or number three receiver going down and having that significantly impact your running game. But for the Rams, where these wide receivers line up just barely outside the offensive tackles, it absolutely will impact the running game. So Todd Gurley's job got harder today.
Can I give you the good news for the Rams?
Yes, please.
They really didn't give up any big plays over the top today.
Well, Seattle's not been a big play offense this year either.
Well, they were against the Rams last time they met. Russell made some plays with his legs in the run game, but I mean, last time they played, it was Lockett and David Moore over the top. Rams didn't give those up. Moving in the right direction, I guess.
My goodness, I'm looking at Seattle's rushing numbers from this game. Russell Wilson had 92 yards, so that I assume how many of those? Do you know how many were on scrambles, Gary? I mean, those weren't designed runs, I would imagine.
Watched the game. I did not see many designed runs. I would say at least 7 or 8 of those are scrambles.
So, all right, let's take Wilson out, which is a lot of yards to take out, because as you know, I think those 92, if they were scramble yards, I think they should count as passing yards anywhere for your. Yeah, but 33 runs for the Rams or for the Seahawks for about just under 200 yards. There, it looks like Rams run defense is not very good. I've heard some have said. I have not heard this from anyone with the Rams. This is outside the organization now. At some have said Wade Phillips really doesn't think run defense is that important. Not in terms of yards per carry. And you know what? He might be onto something there, because the more I've watched every snap of Seattle on film this season. I am really impressed with their running game. But what happens is, and the reason I said they don't make a lot of big plays, at least it feels that way, because when you run the ball so much, you're so dependent on big plays, because otherwise your drives have to go 12 to 15 snaps, and that's just not going to happen. So it's the whole the running the ball, we ought to have a long off-season discussion and examination of really what that means and how we define success in the running game for an offense and defense, because I don't think it's just as simple as the yards. I think there have to be other factors. Seattle ran all over the Rams today, and they did not win the game.
Yeah, well, I mean, situationally, the Rams don't play from behind very often. They played from behind very early in this one, although they pretty much went punch for punch with the Seahawks in the first half and were leading by halftime. But you know, if you don't play from behind, I feel like that's not nearly as problematic. I mean, the issue with their defense is, you know, it's one thing to say we'll give up the yards per carry, but you can't give up the yards per carry and give up the big plays, and they've been giving up the big plays. But this is a workable blueprint with what their offense does. I think it is.
These teams always play each other tough, too. A lot of their games go tight down the wire, and there have been some defensive games. Last year there were, and then there have been some offensive games. It's sometimes teams just match up well, and I know McVay has a lot of respect for Russell Wilson and what he can do. Coaches hate playing against guys that are that X factor, the guys that might scramble for 92 yards against you one day.
They do. I mean, this used to be the surprise games where the Rams would contain Russell Wilson back in the Jeff Fisher days. And, things have evened out a little bit. Seahawks are the underdogs now, and they've hung in there with the Rams twice this year. Let's talk Titans-Patriots. And, look, everyone's going to talk about what's wrong with the Patriots. No Rob Gronkowski today. Julian Edelman went out later in the game. The Patriots are kind of limping into their bye week here. They're also getting the bye week at the right time. I will speak for you, Andy, and say our official statement on this show is that the Patriots will be fine in the long run, and when they get to January, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be them, it's going to be the Steelers, it's going to be the Chiefs, so on and so forth. The Titans, though, and we've talked about the Titans defensively a lot, and we both like the defense. This offense is starting to get it going a little bit, and you know, we were so disappointed when Delanie Walker went down in week one and said, how are they going to make up for this? Today you really saw a pretty good connection between Mariota and Corey Davis. I think this is as good as that tandem that connections has looked in Davis's, you know, whatever, season and a half now to this point. And I think they might have something going here in Tennessee.
Yeah, he has filled the Walker role. Some of the stuff that they were doing with Walker, we have to do it still. We're not going to just drop this from our playbook. Who's the guy now? The guy has become Corey Davis. He's been the matchup factor, the X factor, which is hard for a number one. And this team, he's their number one receiver. And he's got to fill some of the roles of their hybrid tight end, but he's done that pretty well. He looks a lot better. I've been impressed with the season he's had so far. He was not a good route runner as a rookie, and we wondered, is that just a comfort level thing? He missed so much time in camp and early in the season, and when guys are uncomfortable, they play choppy and they don't play as fast as they can. We've seen now that he's not a fast guy or a fast player, but he's played efficiently. He's played fast enough. And in a well-designed offense, that's going to do the trick for you. What they're doing that they didn't do as much early in the season, we're seeing some of that jet sweep stuff that the Rams mm-hmm. have been doing. And LaFleur comes from the Rams, but they weren't doing that as much last year when LaFleur was there. So, you know, he's been watching around the league and seeing how this can help our running game, help our passing game, just decorating our offense. They have to do it with some bells and whistles because they don't have the personnel. Their personnel's below average overall. I've been real impressed. LaFleur is doing a nice job. He's gotten better as a coordinator. He's better now than he was early in the season.
You think LaFleur is going to be a head coach next year?
I think there's going to be a run on young offensive coaches. Everybody's going to want the next Sean McVay. And we heard Zach Taylor's name get floated, their Rams QB coach. That right there tells you that everybody wants the next Sean McVay because Taylor's very new to the – he's been a coordinator before, but he was a Rams assistant wide receiver coach last year. I mean, he's new to the scene. I think LaFleur will certainly get interviews. And then it's just a function of which jobs are available. Sometimes this stuff's a two-year process, too. Great example is Vance Joseph, who could have had a head coaching job before he became the – remember, he's a Dolphins defensive coordinator that 1 year under Adam Gase, Gase's mm-hmm. first year. And Gase brought in Matt Burke, who's now their coordinator. He brought him in because he said he's going to be the actual long-term coordinator. We know Vance is going to leave almost certainly after this season for a head coaching job. Well, Vance Joseph, the Dolphins did not rank very high that year. They just knew Vance Joseph's stock was high from the previous year. Here's another example. The guy that was in this game today that outcoached Bill Belichick, Mike Vrabel, he had the 32nd ranked defense last season, and he got the Titans job this year, not because he went 32 last year, but because he interviewed well the year before. Sometimes this job stuff just takes 2 years. So I don't know if LaFleur will be a head coach or not next year, but he'll be in the mix, and it'll be probably either next season or the year after if he's going to get one of those jobs.
All right, let's go Cleveland Browns get win number 3 here and win number 1 under Greg Williams. Nick Chubb had a franchise record 92 yard touchdown run that sort of broke this one open a little bit, but I kind of want to, and I hate to sort of overlook the Browns on this one. I want to talk about the Falcons and their continued struggles defensively, but also they didn't score in this one. They just didn't come back in this game, and I guess that's partly a function of a talented young Browns defense. They did have Denzel Ward in this one after we feared he had suffered a major injury last week, but. The Falcons. I mean, we were all ready to jump back on the Falcons bandwagon, and they just they had a total dud of a game in this one.
Yeah, they did. I was on it. I was back on because I picked them to win the Super Bowl this year, so I was happy to see it at least have a prayer to happen again. Very disappointing. Not a season-ending game. You know, they're 4-5, so it's not over, but very disappointing loss. Certainly, I will be really interested to see the film on this one with the Browns because. They do a couple of things. It's going to sound weird because these are almost two opposite things, but they play man-to-man coverage really well. And then at times when they're hot and when they're clicking, they play cover two zone really well. So very mm-hmm. divergent coverage concepts there. That's the Greg Williams stamp. He gives you a lot of different stuff. Sometimes, if I'm being honest, I think he puts too much on his guys' plates. But they've been in a better rhythm lately with that defensive stuff, or at least at times they have. I mean, the Chiefs lit them up at times last week. But the Browns do this once in a while. They're equipped to have a breakout game, and you think, oh, here we go, Browns, here they go. It's a little bit a function of just that they do a lot of different things, and some days that works for you. I still question it in the big picture.
Yeah, yeah. Offensively efficient, they were, well, I don't even want to say efficient. They didn't turn the ball over, which was obviously a positive here, and Baker Mayfield ended up 17 for 20. Actually, they did turn over once. That's right. Dontrell Hilliard, the running back, threw an interception on a little trick play. But other than that, they took care of the ball, and Nick Chubb had that one really long run to sort of skew the rushing totals. But Browns, win number three. Good for them. Young team.
And you know what?
They'll come along.
It's good to see. I mean, they performed well. This is not even coming from one of our researchers. I'm doing this by myself. I believe this was the second time in the last 3 weeks that the Browns did not have a receiver with more than 39 yards through the air. The last time was Pittsburgh, week 8.
Okay.
Is that anything? Should I let the researchers do the work?
No. I'm about to blow you away with a stat 2 games from now. So I'm not going to be impressed by that, Andy. Sorry.
Well, I'm not going to be impressed by whatever you've got 2 games from
yes.
now then.
Yes, you are. I can't wait for it. But we got one more game to go first. New Orleans at Cincinnati. The Saints are really good. I don't really know how else to put it. The Bengals have to come up with a different approach defensively, because sitting back and saying we're gonna make this team make mistakes, that works against some opponents.
We're gonna let this team make mistakes. There's a difference here. We're gonna let them make mistakes, and what happens is you run into a team with Drew Brees, and they don't make very many mistakes.
It was fairly predictable. I mean, the Saints end up putting up 51 points and 509 yards. This game was not close. Well, it was 7-7 at the end of the first quarter, so I guess it was close for a little bit, but. This was a blowout. This was a complete mismatch, the Saints offense going at the Bengals defense.
What the Bengals do, they play two deep safeties a lot, which is what they did last year under Paul Gunther, who's now the Raiders D coordinator. It's now Terrell Austin, former Lions D coordinator. He's running the Bengals defense. He still plays those two deep safeties, but it's a little bit of a softer two. It's not cover two. It's more of a cover four. You're laughing, but it's true. I mean, it's a softer cover four. So they want to make you have to sustain offense against them. Remember early in the season, I said the Bengals are an interesting defense because you watch them on film. They don't do a whole lot particularly well, and they're not very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And yet you look up, and here we are in the fourth quarter, and they've only given up 20 points or so. You do have to earn your yards against them. What happens is when you're not very good or very aggressive, teams really start to figure you out and exploit it. And if they know what you're going to be in and you're a passive defense, you become more susceptible to designer plays that beat you. And that's why you've got to wrinkle the stuff. And I'm not saying they're not wrinkling it. Austin's done some of that. He's always done a nice job with wrinkles. But I'm with you right now. I don't think the defensive approach quite fits the person. I think they should be doing a lot more man-to-man coverage with these guys that they have at cornerback. And the issues are at linebacker. Are they fast enough there? We could discuss that. Here's another discussion. It's a theoretical one. Should you let your linebackers dictate your coverage calls? If you've got three really good corners, but you're not comfortable playing man because you don't have any man-to-man linebackers, is that acceptable, or should a coach live with that and find ways around it and say, I've got three really good corners, I'm playing man coverage?
I mean, it's a bit of a trick question because we see what the result is the past 2 weeks, or I should say the past 2 games with the Bengals here. They gave up the huge second half and blew the monster lead against Ryan Fitzpatrick, and it was followed up by this. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say play man. Just make someone do something to beat you. I feel like whenever I watch Bengals games live, the number of times a receiver makes a catch like 12 yards, 14 yards downfield, and then you see defensive backs come into your screen after they've already given up 16 yards. It's rough. It's not working.
You know what's really interesting to me is, Gary, the Buccaneers today against the Redskins, they gave up – the Bucs scored 3 points despite having 500 yards of total offense. They're the only team to do that since 1960.
I knew you were going to try and spoil that, so I did build a I built a second stat here.
So that was not so that's not your stat. That's not your big stat that I'm trying to get out in front of you. That's not
no,
it. You've got something.
You spoiled it a little bit. We're going to Washington, Tampa Bay here. 16-3 win for Washington. But I pulled up every game in which a team had 500 yards. Every regular season and postseason game, there are 632 of them that a team had 500 yards, and this was the first time a team had ever scored 3 points or fewer. That was the Bucs in this game, and the only time in the past 32 years that someone's been held under 13 points while getting 500 yards. I was going to set it up better, so you kind of ruined that. So I hope.
I blitzed your little stat here, and then I blew it up. I maybe didn't take the ball from you on this, but I certainly forced you on an incompletion, because what you just said was not as interesting as it would have been if I hadn't gotten in there first.
No, I was just going to set it up as like a trivia question.
Oh, well, that would have been more fun for our listeners, I guess. I forgot we have listeners that are involved in this whole thing.
It's not just the two of us needling each other and being jerks for 45 minutes every Sunday night. Yeah, this game was wild, and I don't want to take away anything from Washington. I feel like I play down Washington. The other great stat, which you probably saw, and I had seen it, Ryan Taylor, one of my researchers, sent it to me because it's exactly what we've been talking about all year with this Redskins team is they have to be front runners to win games, and they can't play from behind, and they literally and it held true through this game. They have not had a lead change in a game this season. The first team to
really?
Score has won the game all nine.
That's
of their
more
games.
Interesting. That's more interesting than their 500 yard fun fact thing, which is just coincidental because of the turnovers that the Bucs had.
Everyone saw. Everyone already saw that though.
That
you're,
they haven't had a lead change. I didn't see that.
I
was in the dark on that one. That is really interesting. Some might say it's a little bit boring, but that's fine.
No, that is insane. In 2018, to go nine games without a lead change one way or another, it's one thing to have no comeback victories or something like that. No lead change. What? Not even like a, we got a field goal on our first drive, and they scored a touchdown on their
right.
first drive, and that's a lead change. They haven't even had that. Just whoever scored first has won every one of their games.
You can turn off Redskins games now then. Just watch, got first to score. It's like recess
score.
Rules.
It is. Oh, man. Yeah, but look, Washington's at 6-3 right now, but I don't know. So I was thinking about this throughout the day because I gave my impassioned defense of Dirk Koetter on the Deep Dive show on Thursday. The Bucs were inside the Redskins' 30-yard line six times. They ended up getting a field goal. They got a 33-yard field goal. They missed a short field goal. They missed another longer field goal, still within 50 yards. It was a 48-yard attempt. They had an interception, and they lost two fumbles. Can you put that on? I mean, obviously, it's always on the coaching staff to an extent, but can you look at it and say, "Oh, this is a poorly coached team"?
I always wonder that too. Is how do we gauge mistakes? Are they a reflection of coaches or not? And to a certain degree, they have to be, but it doesn't come from coaching decisions, so take that part out. It doesn't come from game planning. It probably doesn't come from motivation or team focus or any of that kind of thing. You don't, like, motivate Peyton Barber to hold the ball better or something like that. I guess. Maybe you do. I don't know. I've never known how – that's a hard question. I've never known how to answer it. I do know that more often than not, owners will just say they'll just blame the coach.
Yeah.
I think Cutter's a dead man walking right now.
Yep. I think we're going to talk about another coach who is similar to that, which is why I asked about Matt LaFleur a little while ago, because I think he's going to have a couple jobs to choose from this upcoming offseason. I mean, people always get fired. It's not a shocker, but I think a couple of guys, unfortunately, and I will continue to defend Dirk Cutter, but I think this might have been the end for him, and we have one other guy who I think this was the final straw today. But with that positive note, let's go to the lightning-ish round, and we're actually starting in this game is in Indianapolis. I almost said it in Jacksonville. This was Jacksonville at Indianapolis. This is Jaguars just disappointing season rolling on here. This was a winnable game. They had a couple of blown coverages early that led to Eric Ebron touchdowns. Colts end up hanging on. Colts are still in it. Colts are still in it too. They end up forcing a Rashard Greene fumble at the end of this one to seal it. The Jaguars had moved into field goal position, but Rashard Greene fumble. Jaguars were in field goal position at that point, but never get a chance to tie it or maybe even win it late. 29-26 Jaguars. Colts, be excited about the Colts here. We talked about them a couple weeks ago. Still winning games.
Offensive line is ascending. They've got guys who are all drafted in the top 40 in their respective years. And then Jaguars, and I'm not saying this was a factor today or not the factor, but it's the big picture of why they're 3-6. Their defensive line has not been what it was a year ago. So better offensive line for Indy, worse defensive line for Jacksonville, and you got two teams going in different directions in the AFC South.
And I'll just say, I think he's going to come up short, but throw Andrew Luck into the MVP candidacy little jar of names you keep in your house or whatever you might do. Another big game, but he has 8 interceptions this year, and I swear to God, at least 5 of them, maybe 6 of them, have been plays where the ball yep. bounced off like the chest of an open receiver. Not even one of those like, oh, it was kind of contested and it deflected off this guy. Like wide open receivers who managed to somehow bat a ball into the arms of a defender who was already beaten by a couple of steps.
Andy. The Colts, and I was just going to add to your point, the Colts lead the league unofficially in self-inflicted wounds in the passing game. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I think it's been a problem not just on turnovers but missed opportunity plays. Now, they've cleaned it up a little bit, and they're starting to win, but this was an issue for them back in early October, and you wonder where they'd be now if they didn't have that issue. I think they'd be above 500.
They did. It was the former VCU basketballer, Mo Alie-Cox, who pulled it off today, turning a wide-open catch into a Telvin Smith interception. Miami at Green Bay. Packers get back on track. I'm still, as anyone who reads my Sunday morning column knows, I was joking a little bit in my Packers are definitely going to win the Super Bowl. I obviously don't think they're definitely going to win the Super Bowl. I think they're still very much in the hunt here. I think they have a chance to collect a bunch of wins in the second half of the season, and this was the kind of game. The offense is still working some things out with all the new receivers, all the rookie receivers rotating in. The defense is getting better and better, and you know, they played probably a B game and still had no problem beating a Dolphins team that has given some other opponents some trouble this year.
Aaron Jones, we haven't talked about him a whole lot. Other than to say early in the season, he's clearly their best runner and he should be the guy getting the ball. And they've now agreed with that, and they are making him the guy. He rushed for 145 yards on 15 carries today. He had a 67-yarder that helps. But, you know, those big ones count too. When you look at some of his advanced metrics, I saw this from Graham Barfield on Twitter. He's with the NFL, NFL.com. But his advanced metrics, his next-gen stats, he's first in yards per carry, first in yards gained after a defender closes, which is a subjective stat, so grain of salt, but first, so, you know, he's up there.
Yes.
First in rushing gains of 10-plus yards, first in rushing success rate, which I believe is a carry of 4-plus yards. These are over the last 2 years. This is where Aaron Jones ranks. He's a good runner for Green Bay, and I think he's gradually changing the makeup of this offense. And imagine what a if they have the guy at running back, like a top 10 running back, imagine what this offense will look like.
Yeah. No, they're going to get better as the year goes on. They can't afford to slip up against a team they should beat in the second half of the season. There's there's very little margin for error, but I'm sticking with my my ridiculous Packers pick. Chiefs, I don't want to overstate this and say like, oh, Chiefs, you know, someone found the weakness or something like that. But Patrick Mahomes was kind of under siege in this game. This was a nice effort by the Cardinals defense in this one, kind of allowed Arizona to hang around. Obviously, the Chiefs got the win, and they're still very, very good, 26-14. But I don't know, Cardinals are much better than they were earlier this season. So give them a give them a gold star as well.
You know what bugs me almost as much as the Ty Montgomery jersey number thing is when they allow – yeah, here we go. Buckle up. Is when teams – they when the uniforms of the two teams don't contrast as much as they could. So what okay. I mean by that is the Chiefs wore their red jerseys at home today, which they almost always do. The Cardinals picked today, of all days, to wear their red pants.
Red pants. I agree with you on that, Andy. I did
yes,
not like that.
Yes, make them
either.
Wear their white. Yeah, and you know, yeah. The Browns and Bengals violate this to extraordinary degrees because there have been games where the Bengals, one, I think last year, the Bengals wore their orange jerseys, their third jersey, and the Browns wore their orange pants that day, and it was just a creamsicle. That was what I called a creamsicle fest. Earlier this year, you had an Easter egg game between the Jaguars, who had teal pants, and the Titans, who had light blue jerseys. Make these teams maximize the contrast of their uniforms so that we can better see the action. Drives me nuts.
Are you going to Creamsicle Fest this year, by the way, this summer? I think Peter Cetera is playing. It's going to be good. Buffalo.
I'm sure that's much funnier than I don't know who that is, but I'm sure the people that do found
Peter
that.
Peter Cetera is Chicago.
No, I don't know who that is.
Oh, well,
Chicago,
well now
Mark, what? Is he from Chicago? What do you mean, Chicago?
Oh, God.
Bears?
Oh,
is he on, not on the Bears?
No, no, no. I yelled at you about Slash a couple years ago. Now Mark Maravich's going to hear this and yell at you about Chicago. I made some disparaging remarks about the band Chicago, and Mark Maravich did not appreciate it, so you'll hear from him on that.
There's a band called Chicago?
Come on. You know there's a band called Chicago.
I'm not surprised there is, but I did not know that. I mean, I would have guessed there was because the odds, like, why wouldn't someone have taken that name? But Chicago could walk into my house and play their number one hit right now, and I'd call the cops. I wouldn't know who they are. No, I do not know.
That would be a great night. That would be better than a night at Creamsicle Fest. But the Saturday in the Park, 25 or 64. You know those songs. If you heard those songs, you'd be like, "Oh yeah, that song, that band."
I'll give you. Listen, my music. I openly admit my music taste is embarrassing. Right now in November, I always listen to JoJo. Remember JoJo? She sang "Get Out." That song, "Get Out," "Leave Right Now." You know, I listen to her.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I don't. But we no, not okay. It's not. It's embarrassing. But I'm owning it. A few years ago on the MMQB training camp tour, someone was playing a Bruce Springsteen song, and I didn't recognize it. And someone mentioned blah, 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 Born to Run, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And it says, Bruce Springsteen, Born to Run. And they played that, and I had never heard that song, or at least I didn't know that I'd ever heard it. Peter King was in the car for that. Peter King has been to 30-plus Bruce Springsteen concerts, and I knew it was really bad because I was like, I thought, oh, Peter's going to react, and I'm going to be the cute little guy here because I don't know it. I get all this attention. He didn't react. He didn't find it very charming that I didn't know what Born to Run. That was a song. I didn't know what Born to Run. I've heard of it, but I'd never heard the song.
Here, this is my thing, and this goes back to the Guns N' Roses stuff. These are you know these songs. You might not know the name of the song or the lyric, but if you heard these songs, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that song. So I don't mind that part of it. I do mind that you didn't know Slash, but I don't mind the part of it where you don't know Chicago. But
I said I did know Slash. I said I went and saw him. I saw him play at the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Well, you
I didn't. I knew who he was after that night. After that night, I'd learned. That's
after
how
that
I
night,
learned
you
who
did,
he
yes.
was. Yeah, which I was only 14, though.
Well, it was also like 20 years after everybody knew Flash. Flash, Slash.
Oh, it's Slash, Gary.
you're really pushing my buttons right now, Andy Benoit. Ever since you spoiled my Bucks stat.
We got one more game. We do have Bills and Jets.
We have the Bills and the Jets, the game of the day. And look, I don't know what's going to happen with Todd Bowles, but I don't think he can be retained after this. And look, the Bills won in Minnesota. They are, as you would say, Andy, an NFL team. Matt Barkley got the start in this one and brought some level of calm the waters, let's say. Yes. And
he's played well before. Remember, he played well in Chicago against Green Bay a few years ago,
yeah,
late in the game. I mean, he Matt Barkley is a respectable NFL journeyman backup quarterback, and I mean that in a positive way.
Josh McCown was a disaster in this one. Jets were really bad offensively. And I think what it boils down to is the Jets have regressed so sharply offensively. I think they have to make a change. I think they have to get an offensive coach in there, or just someone who's going to change the approach with what they're doing on the side of the ball, because it was getting worse with Darnold, and it was terrible with McCown in this one. And by the way, Logan Thomas completed a pass in this one on a fake punt, and I forgot how many ex-quarterbacks the Bills are featuring. I guess two.
Because Terrell Pryor.
Terrell Pryor and Logan Thomas.
Oh, gosh.
That's how many. Two.
Three targets, no catches for Terrell Pryor today in his revenge game against the Jets, but his Bills did get the victory.
They did. They really did. Before we go to Thing of the Week, Andy, Le'Veon Bell, do you have any thoughts on Le'Veon Bell? I mean, if you're listening to this show after 4 o'clock on Tuesday, you know the answer to what Le'Veon Bell has done / will do, if we're talking in the present tense for our purposes on Sunday night. But I'm not going to be shocked if he doesn't report at this point, since it's been reported that he probably will not and all that. But if you had said this back in August, I would have been stunned that this is how it played out.
Yeah, because it doesn't usually. The only guy who's, I think, sat out a whole season is Sean Gilbert back in the 90s, Darrell Revis' uncle, but not coincidentally with how Revis handled his business. So if this quarterback franchise tag thing is true, which I've heard mixed reports, but it's my sense is it is true that if they do tag him next year, it's going to have to be under the quarterback number, which means they're not going to tag him next year. It's in everyone's best interest for Bell to not show up then. Let's also remember, they don't need Le'Veon Bell this year. James Conner has indeed been, he's not as good of a player as Bell is, but the offense has been just as good with him in there in Bell's stead, which tells you Bell, I think, is immensely valuable, but not necessarily to the Steelers. I think he's worth more to someone else, and if I were him, I'd sit and go to someone else next year.
It would be nice for them to have Le'Veon Bell for the postseason. A fresh
Le'Veon
Bell would be pretty good. Fresh Le'Veon Bell, yeah. Well, when he comes in, apparently the way it will work, he'll come in, he'll be on the exempt list for up to 2 weeks, and they'll get him back into whatever shape he has to be in before he takes the field. But yeah,
Connor and him are so different, is all. And Connor's played well. So
yeah.
How do you handle that too? What's the message you send the locker room if the young guy, who I'm sure has just kept his head down and showed up to work every day at running back and has played remarkably well, one player of the month in October, is going to have over probably 1,200 yards rushing, 800 receiving. If you bench that guy for the guy who held out and everybody ripped, or not everybody, but a lot of the veterans on your team publicly criticized, what does that do for the locker room? I mean, at some point, there has to be a human element to this, doesn't there?
Definitely. And look, I don't know if it's necessarily benching James Conner. I mean, they'd be in some sort of timeshare, and I imagine Conner would be taking the bulk of it for the time being. My one criticism, Bell, and I've written about this a bunch, and I think the franchise tag has just become a complete farce, and it is not what it was originally designed to be, and it's especially harmful when it's used in the way that it is used these days on players like Le'Veon Bell, and it's an anti-labor. It's a bullcrap move by a team to franchise tag a guy who they deem not valuable enough to actually sign to a franchise type contract, which would be a long term deal. But Le'Veon Bell, look, maybe he was just planning on not coming back all along. I support the fact that he's holding out, but he should have just reached out to someone in the locker, even just one guy, to just sort of check in and you know, it seemed like he was trolling more than he was actually, you know.
Well, James Conner said he was he'd text him after games. I mean,
yeah.
How do we know he didn't check in with people?
Now, the offensive line seemed to be very upset throughout the first part of the year that they were not hearing from him.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. It's for them to figure out now, or not to figure out if he doesn't show up Tuesday. All right, Andy, thing of the week.
My thing of the week, I've noticed, so if someone's listening this deep in the show, I know they're either huge fans of the band Chicago, which used to be called the Chicago Port Authority, I think, according to Wikipedia, as you were talking there, Gary. They're either that or they're very huge nerdy football fans, so I'll give them the nerdy football fan thing. There's a certain play called 90 Flip, which you've seen a lot. You might not know that that's what you've seen, just like I didn't know that I've heard the band Chicago, actually. But it's where the action flows to one way, and then they pitch the ball to the running back the other way. And a lot of teams are running it more on third down and one. They pitch the ball to the boundary, to the short side of the field for the running back. And what teams are doing now is running jet action off of it. The Chargers did it in this game today. You see it at least two or three times a week if you're just flipping around watching Sunday games. 90 flips, a big play this year, and a lot of teams have had a lot of success with it.
I'm going with I'm just gonna go with the Tennessee Titans. I really like the Titans in like June, and then everyone got hurt all summer, and they were so far behind the eight ball going into the season. I thought it was really gonna be a lost year, and I'd like them more in 2019. Then they started winning games, and it kind of said, well, maybe they'll figure it out anyway. And then they went on that losing streak and said, oh well, that was cool when they were winning, but this is the way it was going to play out anyway. But the fact that Mike Vrabel still has his team, I mean, they have improved rapidly. You know, Matt LaFleur obviously gets a lot of credit for what's going on the offensive side of the ball, but they have overcome a ton to win five games. I mean, if this was a 6-10 season, you'd say, you know, that's kind of understandable. And no one will give Vrabel any Coach of the Year love because they made the playoffs last year, and you take over a playoff team, and you're expected to go back to the playoffs. But I think the job that staff has done and that team has done has been pretty exceptional this year, and they're sitting at 5-4, and that is a very winnable division that they're in. AFC South is going to be fascinating down the stretch here.
I'm excited for the AFC South down the stretch, yeah.
I've got some more Texans stats that I'm going to share at a later date.
Save them for next week. You know, they're playing the Redskins next week, 6-3 versus 6-3. I'm just looking at that schedule now.
Going to be good. Something's got to give.
That might be one. Is that one we want to do on the Thursday show? Did we just commit
to
that?
I have some Texans stats that are just bursting at the seams here.
Well, then let's do it on the Thursday show then, because they didn't play this week, so those stats will still be good. I don't know how did you bring up that you have Texans stats if they didn't have a game today?
Because we were just talking AFC South.
Vrabel, that's right. Yeah.
Vrabel.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I was just talking AFC South. I have one Texans stat that isn't that good, but I'm going to share it anyway on Thursday when we are back with the deep dive show. But that's going to do it for now for this show. Thanks to this episode's sponsor, ZipRecruiter. Please support them the way they support us. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/things and try them for free. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. And thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston for making us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. We will have the mini mailbag as part of the deep dive show on Thursday, so send those questions, talkback@themmqb.com, or you can get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GGremling_SI. We are also both on Facebook. Jenny Brentz and Connor Orr joined the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer on Wednesday. And of course, I will be back on Friday with Jimmy Traina and Scott Gramling for the MMQB Gambling Show. Listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys on Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.